Hi, I'm Terry Griffith. I'm here with my co-host, Dee Boggetti, and we're Bark Radio.
Well, hello there, Bark Radio listeners. I think we want to start today's episode off with some condolences, huh, Terry?
Yeah. For those of you in the doggy world or who watch, I don't know, is it Animal Planet or Discovery Channel? Which one's he on? Animal Planet, I think.
I think so.
That watched Cesar Millan, he has a or had a pit bull named Daddy, who was very much a poster child for the bully breeds. This dog was amazingly intelligent, very calm, very stable, and he just passed away at 16 years old.
Oh, wow. Well, first, it's so horrible to lose our beloved dogs. You and I both know that. But, oh, my gosh, what longevity. That is a long, long, wonderful life for Daddy.
Yeah, he was a very cool dog. I'd seen him on a few different episodes, and it was quite interesting to watch him. And he had a very calming nature. And he Cesar would use him with dogs that were very, you know, either aggressive or unstable or whatever it was. He'd always bring Daddy in with him to kind of go through and do some of the exercises, some of the work with him.
Well, you know, dogs can be incredibly good assistant trainers. I use Murphy from time to time, and I love that Daddy was his helper. And I think a calm dog, a dog with, you know, great behavior can have an incredibly positive influence on other dogs.
I agree. And you know, if you ever saw the episodes with him in it, he did. I mean, he was just amazing. How dogs would respond, and dogs that were barrier aggressive, and dogs that were other dog aggressive, and with him, his energy just permeated the entire area, and he did the other dogs like, yeah, I get it, it's starting to sink in here.
It's just that he was a cool guy, and he will be missed, and Cesar Millan, we send our condolences to you. We understand the loss of a four-legged that you love so much.
Absolutely.
So, from Cesar Millan, we're going to a very, very different subject, although it is about the human-animal bond. And, Terry, you came across this.
I did. This was something not necessarily conceptually strange to you and I, because we've talked about this in some of the programs that we'd like to see happening. But there's a site called AmericanHumane.org, and they have a program that they did a nice write-up on called PAWS, and it's Pets and Women's Shelters Program. And the program focuses on the fact that many women who are in abusive relationships often stay in those relationships because they can't take their pets with them, because there's no place that will let them bring the pets.
And it's well known that oftentimes there is the threat of violence against those pets.
Often, yes. Frequent,
that
yes.
That abuser will say, you know, you leave me, I'm going to kill your dog.
Right.
And so, you know, what a horrible thing to have hanging over your head as someone who is involved in a violent relationship. So wouldn't it be wonderful if you could take your animals with you?
It's a really neat program. Again, we're still kind of fresh on it as far as what they're doing, and I'd like to bring them in and do an interview. But it looks like there's about 7 of these places nationwide, which is way too few.
Mm-hmm. And these places, what you're referring to is domestic violence shelters who have got a program like this in place, where the abused individual can bring her pets with her. Yes.
Right. Correct. Okay. In some fashion. And I don't know if they're exact clones of each other or if they just have some sort of pet assistance program that's there. But we need to find that out. But, given the nature of some of the statistics that are out there, this says 1 in 4 women are victims of domestic violence. Clearly 7 facilities isn't enough.
It isn't. And I took a quick look at the program startup guide that they provide on their website for domestic violence shelters if they're interested in starting this program. And it's terrific because they have multiple approaches that the shelters can take. so folks can bring their animals in. And they address things like, you know, other people being allergic to animals or whatever. And so I think they've really put a lot of thought into this program. And one thing that I know is being done in one of our local domestic violence shelters, there is a program there that allows an individual to bring her, in this particular case, her cat or her dog with her when she leaves the violent home. And they have a relationship with our local SPCA, and that animal can be temporarily housed until hopefully the individual who is being abused can find, you know, a new place to live away from the abuser, and they can bring the animal back into their life. But PAWS takes it a step further and allows them to never be separated from their animals. And how fabulous would that be?
Yeah, I think that's kind of key because, again, part of the healing process, I think, can be helped along with the animal being there because, you know, I mean, you and I know what it's like when you're kind of feeling a little down and dogs bring you around. I mean, they just they have some magic.
Well, they do. And when there are kids involved, you know, generally kids and their dogs or their cats have really good relationships. And, you know, a child who's being separated from the other parent and then also from their pets, you know, that's just added trauma. And like you're saying, if a child has become accustomed, for example, to sleeping with their dog or their cat, and that gives them comfort, same with mom, you know, how wonderful if they can continue that in the shelter. It's going to just, I think, like you said, help the healing process and help them move on because they don't have to splinter their family and their animal's part of their family.
Well, we're going to do some more research in it and see if we can get someone to do an interview with us because I think the program sounds amazing and I'd like to, you know, see what we can do to help with it in our area.
Yeah, I think you're right. I would love to talk to these folks from American Humane and, you know, bravo, what a great program.
Yep, that's amazing.
Yeah, man. All right. So
you had some sort of breakthrough with Tootsie, I hear.
I did. My housemate and I, between us, have four Labrador Retrievers, and one of those labs is hers. Her name is Tootsie. She is a six-year-old chocolate lab. And since we've been housemates, which has been about 2 months, going on three, I guess, we've been working with all four dogs, you know, working on obedience skills. It's kind of probably weird for her two dogs going, oh, we now live with a trainer. How weird is that, you know? But I've been working on, you know, like group obedience skills and stuff, lots of sits and downs and just standard things, and the dogs are being great about it, and they've formed their own new pack with four dogs in it, so they're all really cool with each other. But there's been one thing since I moved in that was apparent, and Sue and I have talked about it. Tootsie has never, in her 6 years, had a down, which is lay down on your belly, and that's kind of just a standard obedience skill. Puppies usually learn sit and down and stays to go with them and go from there. It's foundation behavior skills. And we had a long conversation about Tootsie's past. And when she was a young dog, Sue had taken her to an obedience class. And the instructor in the class insisted that this dog was going to have a down and made Sue stand on this young dog's leash to force her into a down for half an hour, which is absolutely insane. And apparently it really, really worked Tootsie. She never got a down. She never wanted to. In fact, when you stand before her, when I've tried to get a down in the past, she gets this really glassy-eyed look in her. She's like, and I think it's fear. I think it's something, you know, some memory from that past experience. I don't want to do that. It's a scary thing. So today, just something, you know, the light bulb came on in my head, and I thought, okay, if a dog has fear issues at all, what you don't do is you don't approach them head on because that's a dominant move, and, you know, you don't want to be over the dog and making them more frightened. So what I did was I went over to Tootsie and asked her for a sit, and I simply moved my left foot one step to the side, had a treat in my hand, put it in front of her nose, and asked her for a down. Actually, I didn't ask for anything. I just took the treat, moved it down with her nose, and she went into a perfect down that was kind of in a C shape. Her body was in a little bit of a C shape. It wasn't the straight down that we normally get, but she did it immediately.
Nice. That's
it. It was phenomenal, Terry. It's like, okay, all I had to do was change what I was doing to accommodate the fact that this dog had been scared to death all those years ago, and that just traveled with her through the years. And
yeah.
Once I changed my position, she's like, cool, I can do that, not a problem, man.
That's so cool.
I'm like, sometimes as a trainer, you feel like such an idiot. It's like, why didn't I figure this out a month ago, you know? But, well, you know, dogs are so wonderful, and they're so willing if you just figure out how to communicate. And that's what this was about.
That's really, I mean, well, one, I don't understand. And the other trainer must have been insane to have her standing on that leash for half an hour.
Oh, I mean, do we want to talk about aversive training? Oh, don't take me there.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't have went far with me. But
no, it wouldn't with me either. But, you know, as Sue said, you know, when you take your dog to a class, you assume the instructor knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
And so you try to abide what they say, by what they say. And I don't even want to think about the number of dogs who've, you know, gone away with bad experiences because of things like that. But the cool thing is we found the key today. Because what I did is I went back to Tootsie, and I've gotten, you know, half a dozen downs from her, and they're immediate. How cool is that?
That's amazing. And that's, you know, it's... Now you can go forward and continue that training so it becomes natural.
Yeah.
She may eventually just work out of it.
Absolutely. Now that it's no longer an issue. It's not a scary thing anymore. I'm on my belly. It's cool. Everybody else says I can do it too. Look at me. You know? And so the other thing that I hear people say from time to time is, you know, my dog's stupid. You know, he or she can't do this or that. And I've yet to meet a stupid dog. And I've worked with hundreds of them, and so often it's some version of this thing with Tootsie. It's you just have to find what works with that particular dog. I will tell you that with probably 90-95% of the dogs that I've known in the last 10 years, of all the dogs that I've worked with, you know, the standard stuff works. You do, you know, if I do this consistently, my dog is going to do this consistently, or your dog is going to do this consistently. But it's that other 5-10%, you know, where you go, okay, you just have to work through it and figure it out from a behavioral standpoint. And sometimes it's a matter of seriously talking through with the parent of the dog, you know, to see if there is anything in that dog's background, maybe going back like Tootsie to when she was very young, that has just skewed the way they see the world.
Yeah.
So, anyway, it was just so cool. I'm so glad we got to share it with our listeners because it's one of those just happy ending stories.
It is. It really is. It's fascinating. Because, I mean, we talked about this, you know, offline several times about, you know, thinking it was a learning disability or there was something else going on there and whatever. And it turns out it was just, you know, one stupid mistake by one particular trainer.
Right.
And screwed her all up.
And like you said, it's kind of fascinating to see what other doors this opens for Tootsie.
Yeah.
Because this is going to build her self-confidence. And who knows what we'll get from her now. So it's just exciting. I love this stuff so much.
Hey, one other thing that I thought we could share, too, kind of along the same lines, is changes and breakthroughs. And you and I did talk about this prior to the show, but... the changes in Sparky since the event on Sunday. Remember when we were talking about that?
Yes. Share that with the folks, Terry.
Well, you know, the folks that listen to, you know, Tuesday's episode know that Suri had gotten herself tangled up with another dog in the collars and ended up, we had to do CPR on her on Sunday. What I had noticed since then is that Sparky is playing differently with her than he did before. And what I mean by that is she has a game she likes to play where it doesn't matter what the toy is. She wants to grab it and run and get the dogs to chase her. She likes to play that game or chase mm-hmm. the dogs to have the toy. It doesn't matter. It's just a chase game. Mm-hmm. And Sparky never played that before. This week he's been playing that.
You're kidding me.
No, it's really quite amazing that he's just decided, okay, this is cool, I'm going to do this. And
I'm going to play with my girl.
You're going to play with my girl. The other thing that he's done is we have a soccer ball, and Suri will play soccer with you and you know, kick it and retrieve it and whatever. Now Sparky's playing that same game. They both go out and do it. And he's never even acknowledged that ball or cared about it. Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? And boy, I'd like to figure that one out. Wow.
It has to be from Sunday because before, I mean, we've had him 14 months
right.
and never showed any interest in those two games at all with her, just ignored her. And then suddenly Monday, it all began.
That's not a coincidence.
Yeah, it
can't. Something changed in the relationship between your two dogs.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, isn't that amazing? Hey, you know, another piece of the incident with Suri, I want you to let the folks know that she and Winston are cool, right, after
yeah.
that incident?
Yeah, we took Suri over on Monday. We wanted to give her the day to kind of, the rest of Sunday, just to kind of relax and, you know, make sure she was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And when we reintroduced them, we wanted to make sure that we were there because we didn't know how she would react, if she would be some sort of reaction to Winston.
Or how he would react.
And there was nothing. They just went right back to playing as normal.
Don't you love dogs for that?
Yeah.
You know, they don't get huffy and blame each other for something. They're just like, okay, let's play again. It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it was that moment in time, and it's over with, and now they're back to normal. They're, you know, best buds playing, running around doing, you know, dog stuff.
I'll tell you what, dogs are so much further evolved than most humans. they just rock, you know?
just imagine if they had thumbs.
They'd take over the world, there's no doubt.
Exactly.
there would be dogs driving cars. There's no doubt in my mind. Well, geez, what a great episode. Just good stuff going on, I think, Terry. And I think that'll do it for today, huh?
I think that's a wrap.
All righty.
We'll see you guys.